London is going steadily up. That keeper Hudson, we believe, has been now told to receive all orders for fly paper and for preservation of your hen pheasants alive. Oh, quiet. Hen pheasants? Fly paper? The thing's utter nonsense.
Nevertheless, this document struck Justice of the Peace Trevor dead with horror.
Dead? I can't see how this message can have such an effect. It seems to me to be more grotesque than horrifying.
These are the documents in the extraordinary case of the Glorious Scott.
The Glorious Scott? Since I've never heard about this before, I take it this was one of your early investigations?
The earliest, was it? It was the first in which I was ever involved.
First?
Wait a moment. What's on where are you going?
For pen and paper. If you're finally about to tell me about your first case, I should like to make a record of it. Now then, you were saying, Holmes.
I hope your records will be accurate, though.
Of course, of course.
Good. I should hate to think I would be unable to congratulate you on the result. Now, have you never heard me talk of Victor Trevor?
Never. But that's hardly surprising, Holmes. I never heard you talk of your brother Mycroft for the first 7 years of our acquaintance.
Victor Trevor was the only friend I made during 2 years I was at college.
I've been meaning to ask you about that. Which
I was a very sociable fellow, Watson, who was rather fond of moping in my rooms and working out my own little methods of thought, so I never mixed much with my year.
Holmes, which college?
Fencing and boxing. I had a few athletic tastes, and I think my line of study was quite distinct from that of the other fellows, so we had no points of contact at all. Trevor was the only one I knew, and that only through the accident of his ball carrier freezing onto my ankle one morning as I went back to chapel. It was a prosaic kind of formal friendship, but it was effective. I was laid by the heels for 10 days, and Trevor used to inquire after me. Before the end of the term, we were close friends. He was a hearty, full-blooded fellow, full of spirits, and the very opposite to me in most respects. But we had some subjects in common, and for the bond of union that I found that he was as friendless as I had. Finally, he invited me down to his father's place at Stortford, Norfolk, and I accepted his hospitality for a month of long vacation.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Mr. Trump.
So you're the lad with the brain Victor wrote to me about. Well, you're welcome, young Mr. Holmes. Come inside.
What's been happening while I've been away, Dad?
Oh, good deal, Victor. But something I think about in your absence. When I broke up that poaching gang, matters to you, matters. You know, so Edward Hobie has actually been attacked.
Attacked?
No, on his own grounds, if you please. Oh, yes, I know you've been invited to the own videos on his annual shoot. You remember that, right?
You should have seen the look on Musgrave's face, Father. Holmes not only deduced that he sneaked out of his rooms, but he also knew which inn he'd been to and in which young lady's company he'd spent the evening.
Is this true, Master Holmes? I must say, that sounds rather unusual.
Actually, Mr. Trevor, I've been forming the habits of observation and inference into the system.
Now, for what purpose?
I'm not quite sure yet.
Well, Master Holmes, I'm an excellent subject.
So is Victor Schweizer.
Can you deduce anything from me, I wonder? I mean, besides what my boy here has already told you.
I fear there's not very much.
I knew you were exaggerating, Victor.
I might suggest that you were all about in fear of some person in the last 12 months.
Well.
You boxed a good deal in your youth. You've done a good deal of digging. You've been to New Zealand and Japan. And you've been most intimately associated with someone whose initials were Jerry A, and whom you afterwards were eager to entirely forget.
In my heart. It doesn't take much to knock me
out.
Oh, thank you, my boy. I don't know how you manage it, Mr. Holmes.
I hope I've said nothing to pain you, sir.
Well, you certainly touched upon rather a tender point with your deductions. But might I ask how you know, and how much you know, the danger to my life, for instance?
You're sick. By the inscription, I observe you haven't had it more than a year, but you've taken some pains to bore the head of it and pour mogged lead into the hole, so as to make it a formidable weapon. You wouldn't take such precautions unless you had some danger to fear.
Oh, well, that's true enough. Do you remember the poaching gang I was telling you about, Victor? Well, ever since Edward Hobie was attacked, I've been on the guard. And what about the other things? The boxing. Is it my nose? Not a little out of the straight, is it?
No, your ears. They have the peculiar fattening and thickening which marks the boxing man.
Ah. And the digging?
By your curiosities.
I see. What about J.A.?
Simplicity itself. When we were out fishing this afternoon, you bared your arm to draw that pike into the boat. I saw that J.A. had been tattooed in the bend of the elbow. The letters were still legible, but it was perfectly clear from their blurred appearance and from the staining of the skin around them that efforts had been made to obliterate them. It was obvious, then, that those initials had once been very familiar to you, and that you had afterwards wished to forget them.
My, what an eye you have, Holmes. And it's just as you say, that we won't conquer it. Of all ghosts, the ghost of our old loves are the worst. Mr. Holmes, it seems to me that all the detectives of fact and fancy would be children in your hands. Take the word of a man who's seen something of the world. That's your line in life, sir. No, if you'll excuse me, I'll be in the billiard room enjoying a quiet cigar.
I don't understand.
Well, there has to be a first time for everything, Holmes. I'm just glad I was here on the one occasion that you failed to understand something.
Trevor, have I done something to offend your father?
You've given the governor such a turn, Holmes, he'll forever wonder what you know and what you don't know. I feel that way about you all the time.
Sitting out upon the lawn, the three of us, basking in the sun and admiring the view across the broads.
Excuse me, sir, wondered Moy. There's a man here to see you.
What's his name?
Will you give him a name?
But who does he want, then?
He says he knows you, and he only wants a moment's conversation.
Oh, very well. Show him round, will you?
I will find my own way, thank you.
Well, my man, what can I do for you?
Don't you recognise me?
Recognise you? No, sir, I don't believe it. My God, it's surely it's Hudson.
Hudson it is, sir. Why, it's 30 years or more since I saw you last. Here you are in your big house, and me still picking me salt meat out of the harness cast.
I find that I haven't forgotten old times, Hudson. Molly, take Mr. Hudson here into the kitchen. Let's have all the food and drink he wants.
Very good, Mr. Trevor.
Oh, most kind, sir. But I was thinking that perhaps you could provide me with some permanent assistance.
Permanent? Yes, of course, sir. Have no doubt I shall find you a situation.
Oh, thank you, sir. I'm just off a 2-yearer in an 8-knot tramp. Short-handed at that. And I want to rest. I thought I'd get it either with Mr. Beddoes or with you.
You know where Mr. Beddoes is.
Oh, bless you, sir. I may know where all my old friends are. Yes, Mr. Beddoes is living in Fordingham at present.
Yes, he really is. Go inside, my good man, and get yourself cleaned up and fed.
Oh, thanks indeed, Mr. Armitage. Oh, pardon me. I meant to say, Mr. Trevor.
Needless to say, the whole incident left a most ugly impression upon my mind. I wasn't sorry next day to leave Donald behind me. My thought of my presence must be a source of embarrassment to my friend. All this occurred during the first month of the long vacation. I went up to London, to my rooms in Montague Street, where I spent 7 weeks working out a few experiments in organic chemistry. One day, however, when the autumn was far advanced and vacation drawing to a close, I received a letter from Dick Trevor.
My dear Holmes, I've no doubt you remember that fellow who arrived the evening before he left. He said his name was Hudson. I now believe that the man we let into the house that day was the devil himself. He's not had a peaceful hour since. Not one. The governor has never held up his head from that evening. And now the life has been crushed out of him and his heart broken. All through his accursed Hudson. I'd give much to know what power he holds over my father. How could he have fallen into the clutches of such a ruffian? At first, the governor made this Hudson gone. Then, as that didn't satisfy him, he was promoted to butler. The house is at his mercy, and he wanders about and does what he chooses.
Mr. Trevor, I'm not one to complain. You know I'm not.
Well, of course not, Molly.
But Mr. Hudson's drunken habits and his vile language, they're quite on the limit. The other maids feel the same way.
Yes, I imagine they do. So I shall raise their wages all round to recompense them for the annoyance.
And what about Hudson, sir?
Yes, Hudson. He's a man of the sea and he lacks our courtesy. I'm sure he'll learn in time, however. You must be an example to him, my dear.
Very good, sir.
Well, matters went from bad to worse. And this animal, Hudson, has become more and more intrusive. Until at last, when he was making some insolent reply to my father in my presence one day, he took him by the shoulders and turned him out of the room. He slunk away with a livid face and two venomous eyes, which uttered more threats than his tongue could do.
Victor, I really think you should apologize to Hudson.
Apologize? Dad, I can't understand how you can allow this wretch to take such liberties.
It's all very well to talk, my boy, but you don't know how I'm placed.
And how is that?
Oh, Hudson. I think Victor has something to say to you.
Indeed I do. Why don't you go to blazes, Hudson?
Oh, I see. It's like that, is it? Well, maybe I should at that.
Finally.
I've had enough of Norfolk. I'll run down to Mr. Beddoe's place in Hampshire. I'm sure he'll be as glad to see me as you were.
Oh, Hudson, you're not going away in an unkind spirit, I hope.
I've not had my apology.
Victor, You acknowledge that you've used this worthy fellow rather roughly.
On the contrary, Father, I think we've both shown extraordinary patience towards him.
Oh, you do, do you? Very good, mate. Don't think you've seen the last of me.
Victor, if only you knew what you've just done.
Then tell me, Dad.
I can't. Not now. Not like this. But you shall know, Victor. I shall see that you shall know, come what may. You wouldn't brave harm of your poor old father, would you?
After Hudson left the house, my father was in a state of pitiable nervousness. He was very much moved and shut himself up in the study all day. I could see through the window that he was writing busily. Night after night, I hear him pacing his room. I trust very much to your judgment and discretion, Holmes, and I know that you will advise me for the best.
And how did you advise him? I didn't get a chance, was it? Shortly after I received the letter, Victor Trevor himself appeared at my door.
The governor is dying, Holmes. Apoplexy. Nervous shock. He's been on the verge all day. Holmes, you must come back with me to Donnithorpe. But I doubt if we shall find him alive. Sign of returning consciousness.
What then could have been in this letter to come up with so dreadful a result?
Nothing. There lies the inexplicable part of it. Of course.
The supply of game for London is going steadily up. Pitkeeper Hudson, we believe, has been now told to receive all orders for fly paper and for preservation of our papers inside.
You see, the message is absurd and trivial.
I disagree, Victor. I believe this is very serious indeed. I'm sorry.
Oh my God, it's as I feared.
When did it happen, Doctor?
Almost immediately after Victor left.
Did he recover consciousness?
For an instant, before the end.
And did he say anything?
Yeah, that the papers were in the back drawer of the Japanese cabinet. I don't know whether that has some meaning for you. If you'd care to join me, Victor, there are one or two formalities.
And these are the papers from the Japanese cabinet? The ones Trevor Sr. was writing after Hudson left?
They are. Drawn up after he thought danger was imminent. Victor Trevor had neither the strength nor the courage to read the account. He insisted that I keep them, for the story told here is one of sin and shame. Read it, Watson. Read it.
Some particulars of the voyage of the Glorious Scott.
My real name is James Armitage. It was under that name that I entered the London banking house, and as Armitage, I was convicted of breaking my country's laws and sentenced to transportation. On my 25th birthday, I found myself chained as a felon with 37 other convicts in between that and the Glorious Scott, bound for Australia. Thank you. And the ship's doctor. It was over there that the great quarrel arose.
Well, what do you think you were going to do with the ship?
That's what I think about.
out of my equipment. Just suppose this happens. You're either with us, or you share the fate of the prisoners. Well, which is it to be?
Approaching disgrace begins to darken the closing years of my life, I can write with all truth and honesty that it is not the terror of the law, nor the loss of my position in the county, nor is it my fall in the eyes of all who have known me, which cuts me to the heart. It is the thought that you should come to blush for me, you who love me and who have seldom, I hope, had reason to do other than respect me. But if the blow falls, which is forever hanging over me, then I should wish you to read this, that you may know from me how far I have been to blame.
That was the narrative I read that night, and I think also, under the circumstances, it was a dramatic one.
I'm sure young Victor Trevor would have agreed. Poor, poor fellow.
The good fellow was heartbroken at it. Went out to the terror IT bar. It's on the facts of the case of the progress spot, Doctor. And if they're of any use to your collection, I'm sure that they're very hearty efforts in this.
Just a moment, Holmes. You've left so much unexplained.
And I believe I've included every detail of importance.
This is why you're not a writer, Holmes. You completely failed to point out that Trevor Senior's J.A. tattoo referred to his real name, James Armitage, or that Meadows was really young Evans, who had the cell next to his on the Gloria Scott.
Surely, in fact, That's what they're about.
What about the note? The note that sent old man Trevor to his grave. Who sent it? What did it signify? The note, Holmes.
You remember, no doubt, that it was postmarked for you.
For you? Oh, yes. Didn't Trevor's friend Beddoes live in Fordingham?
Oh, no. The same Beddoes whom Hudson had gone to visit and presumably to blackmail.
So the letter might have come either from Hudson, saying that he betrayed their guilty secret, or it might have come from Beddoes, warning an old Confederate that a betrayal was imminent. But it appears meaningless. In which case, it must be in code. Could it be that there's some prearranged significance to such phrases as flypaper and hen pheasant? No. Such a meaning would be arbitrary and couldn't be deduced in any way. Perhaps if I tried backwards. Life, pheasant's hen, your... No. Alternate words. V of four... Supply game London.
Don't be discouraged, Watson. These are the problems I faced years earlier. And then, in an instant, the key of the riddle was in my hands. I saw that every third word, beginning with the first, would give a message which might well drive old Trevor to despair.
The game is up. Hudson has told all. Fly for your life.
Exactly. Look on the other side and show the seniors make that up. See what's written there? The hand so shaky it has been barely legible.
Beddoes writes in cipher that Hudson has told all. Sweet Lord, have mercy on all our souls. But the cipher, Holmes, what's the meaning of head keepers and hen pheasants?
It means nothing to the message, but that didn't kill me since I had no other means of discovering the symbol. You see, he began by writing the game is and so on. Afterwards, he had to fulfill the prearranged cipher to clear in any two words in each space. He would naturally use the first word which came to his mind. And since there were so many which referred to sport among them, I was therefore tolerably sure that he was either an ardent shot or interested in reading. Association of the survey of that study. You remember that Trevor received an invitation from Beddoes to shoot over his preserves?
Actually, I did. Of course. To make the code work, headkeeper and hen pheasants have to be two words each. So Beddoes sent the message to old Trevor. A message that meant disgrace as well as death.
Or not, as things turned out. No complaint was ever lodged with the police, so it seems that Beddoes was taken as a threat to a key.
So, what became of Beddoes and Hudson?
Neither of them was ever heard of again after the day of the letter of warning was written. They both disappeared, utterly and completely. The police were of the opinion that Hudson had run away with Beddoes and fled.
Possibly. But, I should say, it's more likely that Beddoes, pushed to desperation and believing himself to have been betrayed, revenged himself upon Hudson and fled from the country with as much money as he could lay his hands on.
Hudson's expedition, Watson. I dare say you might be right.
You dare say? Didn't you investigate?
You forget, Watson, that I was not a practicing detective. In fact, I had not yet decided to what you such a many deductible answers. Not until I recalled old man Trevor's words.
Mr. Holmes, it seems to me that all the detectives of fact and fancy would be children in your hands. Take the word of a man who's seen something of the world. That's your line in life, sir.
It's my best friend. I just can't understand. I was paid by my father. And I was fine. And I was fine.